Hello and welcome to Tim Walden Brief, although this time it's a little bit later than we'd anticipated. We can only apologise for that. It's been a busy few weeks, but nonetheless, we are here and we're before the next Tim Walden. So let's dive in to April 2025's Tim Walden sitting. Now, first of all, we had obviously the question paper, which is traditional. Members are allocated 2 hours worth of question time, and they almost always use all of that up and often go into to more. This time we had some starred questions, which was from Arbury Castle Town and Malou, MHK Tim Glover. He asked what the rise in global trade tariffs and associated economic implications will have on the island. It's fairly safe to say we did run an interview on that with the Chief Minister afterwards, and effectively the Chief Minister was in the mind of he is just as confused as everyone else. We know what the stock markets were doing, we know what the trade wars, all those headlines that were happening. There was a lot of confusion, a lot of uncertainty, and so the Chief Minister was very much in that mindset. He wasn't sure what was going on, and when you don't know what's going on, he wasn't able to plan ahead. There were a number of other starred questions, but we'll move down to the unstarred questions. And Douglas North, MHK John Wannenberg, asked the Treasury what progress there's been regarding a health surcharge. And what we found out about that was that Treasury was intending on rolling out a health surcharge for new residents. Only new residents would qualify, although we don't know what a new resident actually is defined as. But he did say that anything like that would not be rolled out until the earliest, 2027. So by that point, there will be a new administration in place. Whether that goes ahead, that will be for the new administration to decide, but that is the speculated timeline at the moment for that health surcharge. Obviously, there were a number of other questions throughout, and members did use up all the allocated time. They voted to come back to questions at the end of the order paper. That was a very, very, very significant order paper, and I was in the chamber. You could visually tell people were not so satisfied when the order paper had been completed and then they needed to go back to questions, although there were only a short few left to do. So we'll move over to the order paper now. We then had a statement from the chair of the Select Committee on Dyslexia, Dyscalculia, Dyspraxia and Dysgraphia. That is Rob Callister, Onken MHK Rob Callister. He was the one that picked up that petition for redress from Tim Walden last year. We're approaching almost a year since that petition was put in. That was the only petition so far which was successful. There was meant to be another one, which was George Hargreaves on the future of the Isle of Man Film Festival. David Ashford had originally tabled that, but then he withdrew it, and he hasn't committed to whether he'll actually table that again. We don't really know why that was withdrawn. All we know that from the petitioner himself was that they wanted to regroup, I think was the words that he used. So the dyslexia, dyspraxia and dyscalculia petition was the only one that was successful, and we had a statement on that in the last Tim Walden. We then had quite a lengthy standing committee of Tim Walden on public accounts. That was the second report for the 24-25 session student awards. 13 recommendations in total, and it's pretty safe to say that there would have been Comyn amendments to those. And some of the recommendations, for example, recommendation 7, that Tim Walden is of the opinion that the Department of Education, Sport and Culture should consider alternative options to the academic achievement eligibility criterion, currently 80 UCAS points, to permit access to funding for those with other relevant experience qualifications or clear alternative career paths. So that was just one of the recommendations. Quite a lengthy debate, I would imagine, but not as long as the one which we're about to get to, which is the Tim Walden Standards and Members' Interest Committee. This one was an interesting one because it lasted for about 2.5 hours before members decided that it was time to adjourn it and actually come back to it in July. So we've got 2 months to wait before they'll actually vote on that. Whether they'll have a similar size debate, who knows? But effectively what this was a major overhaul of Tim Wald's standards system and a shake-up of how misconduct by members of Tim Wald is investigated and handled. And that was what was proposed in this quite major report published by the island's Parliamentary Standards Committee. So the Tim Wald Standards and Members' Interest Committee laid out those detailed reforms, which were designed to increase transparency, boost public confidence, and also introduce greater independence into the way political conduct is scrutinised. So the key recommendations of this include the creation of a parliamentary standards commissioner and the appointment of lay members to the committee and a new system which would allow the public to raise complaints about the conduct of elected representatives, which was a power previously restricted to Tim Wald members. So under the current rules, only members of Tim Wald can formally submit complaints about their colleagues. The committee described this as at odds with neighbouring jurisdictions and proposed a committee gateway as a compromise, allowing the public to effectively submit complaints, which would then be reviewed and potentially progressed by the committee. Critics have previously argued that this system allows political considerations to overshadow accountability, in essence. However, the committee insists that the new model does strike the right balance between access and safeguarding public resources from frivolous claims. However, there was a fair few number of politicians who stood up to almost reject the report in its current form. For example, on ConMHK, Rob Callister, we know that he was ordered to apologise to Tim Wald following a misconduct investigation during his time as the health minister. But he said there are several areas which still need strengthening. And that was kind of the main theme throughout a lot of the politicians who stood up to comment on it, that they felt that there were areas that were lacking. So that's why they decided to adjourn it after 2.5 hours of debate and then come back to that in July. Obviously, this would not be Tim Wald in Brief if we did not spend an excessive amount of time talking about the mandate to Manx Care. This was one of the longest debates that we have had, well, that I've ever seen. It was the longest debate that we've had in this administration so far, so much so that I'm actually going to have to bring up the website article that I wrote, because it's simply just too long to remember, and to try and summarise it would not do it justice. So give me just 5 seconds and I'll Google it. Okay, I'm back. We've now got it open in front of us, and hopefully I'll be able to talk about this in a little bit more cohesion, if that's the right word. So what we have here was Ramsay MHK Laurie Hooper. He tabled a motion which called for the Department of Health and Social Care to produce revised documents, which he said would avoid significant curtailments to frontline services, fully implement recommendations from bodies such as the Care Quality Commission and Ofsted, and avoid replacing NHS provision with private healthcare alternatives. This is Laurie Hooper's big thing. He keeps saying that the way that the health service is being run, the way it's being driven, being directed, is to move more people over to the private sector. Obviously, the government denies that. The health minister throughout during this debate did say that they still want to comply with the founding principles of the NHS. But what his mandate, what his motion tried to do was to throw out the existing one and get a new one. Obviously, what we know is that motions, you know, in general, a motion is not a legally binding thing. It's effectively almost like, if you want to call Tim Wald a pressure group at that point, they can express an opinion, but it doesn't have to be legally binding. It's not legally binding. And so the motion, even if it had been successful, it wouldn't have required Manx Care and the Department of Health and Social Care to do anything. A motion is not legally binding. Quite interestingly, at the beginning of the debate, when Laurie Hooper was setting out his opening remarks, he acknowledged what he called the government's automatic voting majority, and that was due to the number of ministers and the absence of two MHKs. So Laurie Hooper said he did not expect the motion to succeed, but he did urge members to vote with their conscience, warning that they would be held accountable by constituents at the next general election. And we know the next general election is only, 18, 17 months away. So we're already starting to see a little bit of electioneering happening. But I imagine that will ramp up in the months to come. a lot of MHKs stood up. We obviously had Laurie Hooper with the first one, where he was saying that he would much rather spend the money than spend the patient, because you can get the money back, but you can't get lives back. Almost every MHK stood up. We had Douglas East MHK Joni Farragher, and she was saying that there will be a burden that we're passing on to future generations, and every member of the Council of Ministers should examine their own conscience and principles. So she was obviously in favour of the motion. She was against the current mandate and the operating plan. We then had Peel and Glen Faber MHK Kate Lord Brennan, who acknowledged the concerns raised by other members thus far, but she also commended the Department of Health and Social Care for what she described as a willingness to confront difficult and long-standing issues. We'll then move to Rob Callister, who said that he was disappointed that a general debate on health reform had not taken place sooner. But we know that Laurie Hooper didn't want to have a general debate because there's no opportunity to vote in a general debate. Only a motion can you vote. So in a general debate, which would have happened the month before, that was tabled for March's sitting, but Laurie Hooper managed to effectively veto it because enough members voted against debating that, because he sold it to them on the pretenses that he was already going to be bringing this forward the following month. So there was no point debating it there. Debate it the next month when you can actually put a vote down and say where your position is. The Attorney General spoke. It's not very often that the Attorney General speaks, but he's often called to provide legal clarification on things. He's obviously not political. He has to be impartial. So his job is to say specifically where the legal boundaries lie and to give legal advice to Tynwald as and when they need it. He reminded members that under the Manx Care Act, the power to revise the mandate lies solely with Department of Health and Social Care, and any amendments would also require agreement of Manx Care, and that would only be considered under exceptional circumstances. He did stress that there's no statutory requirement for Tynwald to approve the mandate or the operating plan. He said that those provisions were deliberately established when Manx Care was created. And just to finish, he said that Tynwald cannot overrule the mandate without introducing new legislation to override or suspend, displace or replace the existing provision. That was particularly interesting because various Tynwald members then used what he said as reason to vote against. We heard from a couple of MLCs, we heard from a couple of MHKs who said that based on what the advice from the Attorney General was, that they would be voting against because it was not, in their words, it was not a legal motion. But Laurie Hooper said that that failed to understand that all motions are not legally binding. So this was just spelling that out. We also heard from Tim Glover. We heard from the Health Minister, of course. She delivered a robust defence of the mandate and the accompanying operating plan, rejecting accusations that the documents represent a deliberate scaling back of patient services. She responded to various criticism from various members, and she said that she strongly objected to personal interpretations of the documents, and she said that she felt her own comments were being taken out of context. We'll move on because I don't want to spend 10 hours discussing this myself. We've already sat through one mandate debate, so I think we can maybe move on swiftly. But if you are interested, obviously we do have a full comprehensive article which is titled Hooper Delivers Scathing Criticism of Health Mandate as Assault on Frontline Services. If you Google that, you'll be able to read what all of the MHKs and the MLCs that spoke said. Once the Mandate 2 Manx Care debate had finished, it was quite visible that people were ready to be done with Tynwald for that month. But then they had a few more bits and pieces to go through, which were just largely formalities. They tend to nod them through without anything, without really saying anything on those. A couple of orders and things like that. And then obviously they did return to the question paper after they'd done all of that and finished off the remaining few. And that's it for Tynwald in Brief this month, or should I say last month. I do apologise again for the amount of time it's taken to produce this podcast. We'll be back with you next week from the 20th of May in the Tynwald Chamber, live on AM 1368 or online at manxradio.com, bringing you all of the proceedings that happen throughout. I've been Christian Jones. Till next time, take care. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.